The movie adaptation of the Broadway musical Chicago is nominated for 13 Oscars. My guest John Kander wrote the music for Chicago, along with his longtime songwriting partner, lyricist Fred Ebb. They also wrote the songs for Cabaret, Kiss of the Spider Woman, Woman of the Year, and the Martin Scorsese movie New York, New York, which included their song New York, New York. The original Broadway production of Chicago premiered in 1975. It was choreographed and directed by Bob Fosse and starred his wife Gwen Verdon and Cheetah Rivera. The show was based on a play inspired by a sensational 1924 murder trial in the city of Chicago. The musical tells the story of two singers who each murdered the man who betrayed her and the lawyer who manipulates the media and turns the murderers into celebrities. The adaptation was written by Bob Fosse and lyricist Fred Ebb. Here's the opening song from the movie soundtrack featuring Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. And all that jazz, start the car, I know a whoopee spot. The gin is cold, but the piano's hot. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly brawl. And all that jazz.
John Kander, welcome to Fresh Air. It's great you're up for all these Academy Award nominations, 13. In 1975, when the show was on Broadway, you got 11 Tony nominations, and I think you didn't win any of them, right?
No, we were up against Chorus Line at that time. Also, Chicago in 1975 got very mixed reviews, and I must say, speaking with out of my vanity, it's terrific that after all these years, some of the same critics who didn't like it in 1975 seem to like it and approve of it, and that I get a real kick out of that.
Is this a show you always loved? I mean, where do you see this fitting into your body of work?
Well, this is a show which I grew to love. This is my partner Fred Ebb's favorite show, I'm sure. He was very excited about it from the very start. It took me a little longer to sort of warm up to doing it.
But yeah, why did you have to warm up to it?
Because I remember when the idea was first brought to us, and Fred was extremely enthusiastic, and God knows I was excited to work with Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. I was worried that we were writing yet another piece about show business as a metaphor for life. But as we got into it, I liked it more and more, and now I'm really crazy about it.
Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon were getting a divorce when Chicago was in the works. And I've read that this was kind of Fosse's, it was part of Fosse's divorce settlement with Gwen Verdon to give her a part in this musical. What a strange sounding story that is for a husband and wife to be collaborating on a musical as they're divorcing.
Well, even after the divorce, they maintained a very strong relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And Gwen, and after Bobby's death, Gwen continued to be his chronicler, if you will, and the defender of his work. So I guess the marriage didn't work, but the collaboration certainly did.
I should mention that Gwen Verdon played the part of Roxy Hart, the part that's played by Renee Zellweger in the movie version. Bob Fosse had a heart attack after the rehearsal started for Chicago. That must have been devastating for everybody.
It was about 3 days into rehearsal, and yes, he had a, I don't know whether it was a triple bypass or quadruple bypass, but it was very serious. And when we resumed rehearsals some months later, his personality was pretty dark by then. I think he'd been through a great deal, and I think Fred would agree with me that affected in some way the work that we did on the show. The show itself became more biting, more cynical, if you will, than it had even started out to be. And there was always a kind of not a death wish, but there was always a something self-destructive about Bobby's behavior. He was a terrific man with a very dark side.
I'd like to play a recording that you and your songwriting partner, Fred Ebb, the lyricist, made together in 1973 while you were performing at the 92nd Street Y in New York's Lyrics and Lyricists series. This is a series in which
they
had songwriters come in and do their work. So this was 1973 before Chicago had actually opened on Broadway, so nobody knew these songs. You were still working everything out. And I'm going to play your version of All That Jazz. And Kander's at the piano. Fred Ebb is singing, but then John Kander comes in and makes it a duet.
Find a flask, we're playing fast and loose. And all that jazz right up here is where I store the juice. And all that jazz, come on, babe, we're gonna brush the sky. I bet your lucky Lindy never flew so high. Cause in the stratosphere, how could he lend an ear to all of that? A jazz. Oh, you're gonna see a sheep, a ship, a shake, and all that jazz.
Oh, I'm gonna shimmy to my goddess break,
and all that jazz.
Sure, I'm gonna pop my girdle off. My mother's bought a kirtle if she'd hear her baby's queer for all that jazz.
Stockings down and all that jazz. Start the car, I know a whoopee spot where the gin is cold but the piano's hot. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly crawl and all that jazz.
That's John Kander and Fred Ebb performing their song All That Jazz from the musical Chicago. This was recorded in 1973 at the 92nd Street Y in New York. Now, the song kind of turns into a canon or a round in the duet part.
It's just a little counterpoint. The chorus is singing one thing, and Velma Kelly, who was singing All That Jazz, is singing another thing. And we've done that a lot in our careers. Any composing team does. Of just a contrapuntal section to make the song work toward a climax.
How tricky is that to write?
It's tricky only in like working out a puzzle is tricky. It's fun. And as a matter of fact, I think the secret of our longevity is that writing for us has always been fun and still is to this day. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. We write, we enjoy the process of writing. There was a time out of town with Chicago where Fosse almost apologetically asked us to write a song to replace a song near the end of the show. And it was as if he was saying, oh, I'm sorry to ask you to do this terrible thing. And well, we looked at our shoes and allowed us how we'd give it a shot. And then we left the rehearsal room and went skipping down the hotel room, the hotel corridor practically, because we were so delighted to get back to what we like to do. So we wrote a song in a half an hour called Nowadays and took the rest of the day off.
Let's hear the torchy version that's sung by Roxy Hart. And we'll hear from the movie soundtrack, Renee Zellweger.
It's good, isn't it? Isn't it great? Isn't it swell? Isn't it fun? Isn't it nowadays? There's men everywhere, jazz everywhere, booze everywhere, life everywhere, joy. Yeah.
That's Renee Zellweger singing Nowadays from the soundtrack of the film Chicago. I know you didn't write the lyrics. Your partner, Fred Ebb, did. But you must have both really steeped yourself in the language and music and stories of the 1920s to do Chicago, which is the decade that the musical is set in. What are some of the things that you immersed yourself in to write Chicago?
Well, I know Fred did a great deal of research. As a matter of fact, I think the phrase "all that jazz" came out of an article that he read. And as far as the music is concerned, I listened to a lot of jazz of the 20s, a lot of old recordings, and then just forgot about them. Hoping that the style would seep through somehow. Plus the fact that Chicago is a vaudeville. We call it a vaudeville for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons that we call it that is because many of the songs are related to specific vaudeville performers. Eddie Cantor, Helen Morgan, Sophie Tucker, Burt Williams. And so we listen to recordings by those people as well.
If your partner Fred Ebb was here, I would ask him a question that maybe you know the answer to. What does it mean in the lyric of "All That Jazz" to rouge your knees? Did people rouge their knees?
Yep, they sure did.
And what was that about? They actually put red stuff on their knees.
Their skirts were higher, and you would rouge your knees and wear your stockings down. And then go out in Charleston.
I guess that was very sexy.
I guess so.
I mean, in that period, it was considered very sexy.
Sure.
Now, you were writing songs that you knew Bob Fosse would be using as the music for his choreography. You were already very well acquainted with Bob Fosse's choreography because you'd collaborated together on Cabaret. Were there certain rhythms that you knew would work for Fosse choreography that you intentionally put in, not only because it was set in the 20s, but because of Fosse?
I think so. Fred was very smart about that. I remember we wrote a song called Razzle Dazzle. And before we took it and played it for Bob, Fred said, try adding a couple of finger snaps to it. Bobby will love that. And what turned out was da-dum, da-dum, da-da-dum. And those claps were finger snaps just then. And he said it with absolute assurance, and we took it in and played it for Bob, and as soon as he heard the fingers snapping, he loved the song.
There's a similar rhythm going on in All That Jazz. There's two beats that could easily be a couple of hip bumps and grinds.
Yes, I think that's true. I think probably if you listen to the score of Chicago straight through, you would find a certain amount of continuity or similarity particularly with the accompanimental figures in a lot of the songs. That's mostly unconscious, as I said, just listening to a lot of jazz of that period and then letting your brain soak in it and then just writing.
What's your collaborating process with lyricist Fred Ebb?
Well, it started when we first began to write together, and it's still the same today. I go over to Fred's house, and we talk for a long time, and if we're working on a show, we speak about the moment that we're about to try and musicalize, and we talk and talk and talk, and then maybe Fred will have a lyrical phrase, like All That Jazz. And maybe I'll have a rhythmic idea. And from then on, we improvise together, and literally together. And it's Fred never hands me a lyric and says, set this. I never hand him a completed melodic chart and say, write a lyric to this. We just don't work that way. I would say 95% of everything we've written together, we've written in the same room at the same time. But ever since we started writing together, we've been faithful.
How do you know in the book for a show When is the right time for a song? Is it just like the pacing, or is there a certain kind of emotion that calls for a song?
Well, the simplest answer, it seems to me, is when a character has reached that point where dialogue seems insufficient. We've worked with some terrific collaborators who understand that. Terrence McNally, with whom we've done three shows, is very good at writing a scene that has five pages in it that he knows perfectly well we're going to steal and musicalize, but where he will let a character go on in dialogue in a way which is probably unnatural for him emotionally to do. And that he does that in order to turn Fred and me on to musicalizing it. In Chicago, because it was a vaudeville, it was a little more cut and dried. We would get to a point where Mama Morton, for instance, appears on the scene, and she needs to tell the audience exactly who she is. And that seems more natural in song than in dialogue.
Do you think you would have written as many songs if it weren't for the fact that there's the show that you're obliged to write, and you have to come up with 10 songs for the show, the pressure's on?
I probably would not have. There's something about the responsibility that you have in a collaboration which is a spur to me. I've always written music, and I probably always would, but when you have a structure and you have collaborators and you have a room full of actors who are waiting to be fed, it makes you get to work.
Let me ask you about one of your most famous musicals, which is Cabaret. At what point did you enter the process?
Well, we had done a musical called Flora the Red Menace, which Hal Prince produced and George Abbott directed. And Liza Minnelli starred in it, and it was her kind of her Broadway debut. A couple of weeks before the opening in New York, Hal Prince said something which I've told this story often. I can't imagine a producer in his right mind today saying. He said, "No matter what happens with Flora, the day after it opens, we'll meet at my house to start talking about the next musical." Well, Flora opened, and it was not a success. And the next day, we were at Hal's house talking about a musical which came to be called Cabaret.
What was the discussion like that day?
Well, he had the rights to the Berlin stories. And
the Christopher Isherwood stories.
Yes, Christopher Isherwood stories and the John Van Druten play, which had been based on them. And he had a writer named Joe Masteroff, with whom he'd had some discussions. And from that very first day, we started our conversations, which eventually lead to knocking out a narrative. It's what I was talking about before. The whole collaborative experience that we have had has been very fortunate in that what if Sally Bowles has an abortion? What if somebody throws a brick through the window? It's a game that I've come to call What If. It's really a lot of fun. Everything is possible, and the director, the writer, the composers sit in this room and imagine elements in a story, imagine characters. It's terrific. And it's a real turn on for me.
For Chicago, you listen to a lot of music from the 20s. What did you listen to for Cabaret?
For Cabaret, I listened to a lot of German jazz and vaudeville music, of the late 20s and very early 30s, and then promptly forgot about it. It's the same thing happened with Zorba, and listening to a lot of Greek music and to Kiss of the Spider Woman with Latin American music. It sounds like a very kind of crude way of doing research, but it works for me. You listen and you listen and you listen and then put it away and don't think about it anymore. And I have this absolute belief that the styles that you have been listening to, of the music that you've been listening to, seep into your unconscious and come out in your own language.
Your work keeps getting new lives. You know, Chicago had a big revival in 96. It's still running on Broadway, and of course now it's a hugely successful movie. Cabaret, there was a revival, a very successful revival of that just a few years ago on Broadway.
And that's still running as well.
Do you think that the musicals keep changing as they're given new lives? I mean, for example, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that Chicago keeps getting slightly more S&M in tone as time goes on, and probably Cabaret also, at least on the part of the MC, the character that was originated by Joel Grey.
I think any piece of musical theater, whether it's an opera or musical comedy or whatever, if it's a piece which has some value, whenever it's revived, it will be revived within the recognizable language of its contemporary audience. Is that a sentence that I just made there?
Good enough for me.
So that when Cabaret was first done in 1966, it was in many ways quite shocking to its audience, to that audience in 1966, and considered almost avant-garde. When the revival that Sam Mendes and Rob Marshall did came along, the one that's running today, it also became somewhat shocking to its contemporary audience. So in a funny way, Cabaret now feels to its contemporary audience the way it felt to its audience in 1966, even though the two productions are quite different.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. Do you ever wish that life was a little bit more like a musical, and that there would be certain occasions where you could break into song and dance?
Well, yes. Unfortunately, I don't wish that life were like our musicals, considering how many people we've killed.
Too many murders.
Yeah. I mean, Fred and I have been involved in some pretty heavy stuff in musical theater. As a matter of fact, the other day we were trying to count up how many people we've killed in our musicals.
But the songs are good.
Thank you.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I assume you're going to the Academy Awards.
I don't know. That's pretty scary. We'll see. And,
you're actually thinking of not going.
It's conceivable. We don't know yet. A lot of it.
Why would you not go?
Because it's terrifying.
Wait, that's you wouldn't be terrified sitting at home? I mean, you'll still be in suspense.
I could sit in front of a television set and drink heavily and not. I don't know yet. Half of me wants to and half of me doesn't. We'll see.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Okay, good to talk with you. Thank you.
Same here.
John Kander wrote the music for Chicago. The movie adaptation is nominated for 13 Academy Awards.
Mr. Billy Flynn in the press conference rag. Notice how his mouth never moves. Almost.
Where'd you come from?
Mississippi.
And your parents?
Very wealthy.
Where are they now?
6 feet under. But she was granted one more start, the convent of the Sacred Heart.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Salad, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, and Jessica Chu. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
I met a must, and he stole my heart away, convinced me to elope one day.
Oh, you poor dear, I can't believe what you've been through. A convent girl, a runaway marriage. Now tell us, Roxy, who's Fred Casely?
My ex-boyfriend.
Why'd you shoot him?